This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Right now that time, 8:18, you're tuned to WGNS again on this Monday morning, today the 15th of July. And this morning we have guests in studio from MTSU, and our first guest is Dr. Jennifer Stewart, new Assistant Director for Research Initiatives at the MTSU Tennessee Center for the Study of and Treatment of Dyslexia. I lost track while in the middle of it. So, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. So, tell us a little bit about your background, what brought you to MTSU, and then about the center.
I applied for this position a few months ago at the request of my good friend, Dr. Karen Kehoe, who is the newer Director of Dyslexia Services for the center. So, coming into this, I got my PhD from Southern Methodist University. I was trained through a large federal grant during my PhD studies from the National Center on Intensive Intervention. So very near and dear to my heart of bringing in interventions for students, researching interventions for students with disabilities. And the center just seemed like a great fit to continue forward with my passion, my desire to.
So what are some of the things you'll be doing there with this position?
So I am in charge of all of the research that we're going to be conducting at the center. So just like other faculty within the College of Education, we look at our own research questions as well as providing testing services for students with dyslexia. So my part is on the research side. So pulling in federal grant funding, maybe foundation grant funding. So getting money to do the research. Before I got into this position, the center had a large focus on neuroscience. So our chair of psychology, who runs the, who's the endowed chair of the center, and the previous director of research, they are brilliant neuroscientists, but that's not my background. I was a special ed teacher before I even started my PhD program. So I look more on the teacher side of things, while previously the center looked more on the brain side of things.
So when it comes to disabilities, you know, all the different learning disabilities out there, it seems like, for example, local high schools are paying more focus, more time and attention towards these disabilities than they did in the past. But what are you seeing here at MTSU, and how do you work with things like dyslexia?
So dyslexia is obviously a reading disability. We try to catch it as early as possible. So while we do screen K through 12 at anybody that wants to come to the center, we try to put that focus on early intervention. So trying to catch students as early as possible. So bringing them in, getting them that intensive intervention, because we want to make it to where they feel proficient as they go through their school years, because we do have students that are in fourth, sixth, eighth, even in high school that can't read very well. They probably get very discouraged because either they didn't get diagnosed early enough or just they got passed along the way. So we're trying to get them into intervention as soon as possible.
If we had proper testing in every school across the U.S., would people be surprised at the number of students who have some type of disability and the number of those who have dyslexia? And maybe that's a reason why some schools are underperforming while others are not?
I mean, it's a potential. Screening is still, it's a long process to really make sure that we target it. So to say if we tested as many students as possible, we definitely have indicators in schools, and teachers and administrators are working really hard to kind of catch those flags along the way, be it in the universal screening process that they do 3 times a year. Most schools do it 3 times a year, and a progress monitoring process where we're trying to catch it every 6 to 8 weeks to see how they're working on their skills, using that screening along the way to kind of catch it as soon as possible. But it is a pretty nuanced process. We're trying to make sure that everything is in an alignment, that it's a true disability, and maybe not a teacher that was as skilled in teaching reading, that maybe they lost something along the way just because of a teacher's teaching style or not enough training in teaching reading. So we just want to make sure that we're catching it. We're catching a true disability as opposed to we need to catch them up with intervention because maybe it's just something they didn't get in instruction.
So do you have a lot of kids today who may have been struggling in school? You come to find out, well, they do have dyslexia, but you don't find out until maybe they're in ninth or 10th grade.
Yeah, that's definitely, there are definitely cases out there that that happens. And it's sad, but we can definitely get them into intervention, get them into services that can support them and push them through if they choose to go into college. There's definitely accommodations that we can help if they get that dyslexia diagnosis later, or we can help them as they go into maybe a more technical school.
Again, our guest today, Dr. Jennifer Stewart, the new Assistant Director for Research Initiatives at MTSU's Center for the Study and Treatment of Dyslexia. So when it comes to children who have dyslexia, let's say middle schoolers and, you know, the years before that as well, is there a target age where you would like to catch this? I mean, obviously as young as possible, but I'm sure there is at some point an age where maybe they're too young to actually catch it. So is there a prime age?
So kind of the sweet spot that we try to look at is more like a first and second grader. We definitely see signs in kindergarten. You can definitely see them in pre-K. But we want to give them that chance to be in school first for them to really go through reading instruction before we think like, hey, there's some flags here. We definitely need to look at more intervention. So first and second grade would probably like a 7 to 8 year old.
Okay. And then how are you going to go about looking at past data at this center? And what are you going to do with all the past studies and the information they have?
So I'm not a neuroscientist. So luckily, our chair, Dr. Tim Odegaard, has really helped sit down with me and talk a lot more about the brain. But as I'm coming in, I'm looking at our upcoming steps in research through more of an implementation science lens. So my questions revolve around how are we doing it and under what conditions. So we're doing two big initiatives right now with teacher training. So we have our dyslexia therapist training program that just started over the summer. It's an intensive program. And then the center, before I got there, launched a kindergarten through grade 2 training module for teachers and university students, training them in dyslexia. So I'm looking at the data that's coming in on teacher knowledge. So we know a lot about the brain and how students with dyslexia, how the brain fires and where it ignites and how we can change intervention. So we're switching that focus to like how teachers are teaching to match the needs of the brain. So I'll be coming in and looking at how teachers are teaching and under what conditions these teachers are teaching to help shape their interventions a little bit more.
Do some teachers find that students who have dyslexia, maybe at first it's not diagnosed, do they find that sometimes students, they've already adapted their own way in order to cope with having dyslexia?
Yes, or they kind of go the other way that they end up with a lot of anxiety around reading. So part of the teacher's job is to help to squash the anxiety a little bit more, give them tools to help them see that reading isn't as hard and isn't as scary when we can get these proper interventions in place, these proper coping skills.
And because MTSU is known for educating future teachers, do you have, or I guess all those who become teachers, are they required to take some kind of course that deals with these types of learning disabilities so they can understand them?
So a lot of College of Education, general ed teachers and special ed teachers have some course in reading disability diverse learners. I'm only a month into the program here at MTSU, so I don't quite know our College of Ed, but I would be under a very strong assumption that even their general education teachers have some course in diverse learners, which would include students with dyslexia.
And what are some things to look for, especially in younger students, that would show, you know, hey, this is a sign of dyslexia or maybe something else?
So a lot of it would come into how well they're picking up letter sounds. So they might be able to recognize letter names really easily, but putting a letter name to a letter sound might be harder. As they're starting to build words, we call it fluency, like as we're putting things together and we're reading text more connectedly. So like reading through a sentence, if it seems really disjointed, if it seems like they're having a really hard time sounding out and getting through, that fluency aspect might be a big red flag. And we look a lot at spelling because dyslexia is a phonological processing disorder, meaning how the sounds are coming to our ears and we're putting them on the page. We're really looking at how they're making the connections between letter sounds and the letters that they put down. And
For those out there who are listening who have heard of dyslexia, and I'm sure pretty much everyone has heard of dyslexia, but I think for years and years, folks thought that, well, if you're dyslexic, you see words backwards, but there's a whole lot more to it than just that.
And those are myths. So like seeing words backwards, or they talk about letters jiggling on the page, or a lot of those are dyslexia myths and not necessarily true to it. Now, that could be happening in very rare cases, but your typical person with dyslexia isn't seeing all the letters backwards. They're not having jiggly words on the page. It pretty much is how their brain is thinking through sounds and seeing them on the page and making the connection to it.
I haven't heard the jiggly words. That's interesting. So I guess what really are some of the main things that those who have dyslexia, what are the main things they have? Because I know you talked about the way something may be heard, but what are some of the other things that may be more common?
So spelling is a big one. Spelling, and then eventually as they get older, so we talked about like trying to catch them as young as possible, some of the skills that I was talking about, but the spelling and the letter sounds and the letter names, that definitely comes earlier in education. One strength that they have, though, is because they're really, really good at processing a lot of background knowledge. So their vocabulary tends to be very rich as they get older. They tend to have very rich vocabulary and, to a degree, stronger comprehension than maybe some of their decoding or spelling skills. Comprehension definitely can take a hit as they're getting older too, trying to process so much information at once. So sometimes as they get older, it's kind of just an information processing overload.
Are there often a lot of other learning disabilities that go along with those who are diagnosed with having dyslexia?
Yeah. So dyslexia itself is part of that kind of neurodivergency family. That's a big fancy word that a lot of people are starting to throw around right now. They're like, I'm neurodivergent. So some things that might fall under that umbrella would be ADHD tends to go pretty hand in hand with a larger population of students with dyslexia. There's not a lot of studies, but there's some connections to students with autism having dyslexia as well. Just the way the brain is wired, it tends to kind of fall under that umbrella.
And how big of a department is this at MTSU? How many teachers? What are we looking at?
So at the center, there's just a mighty team of, I think there's six of us. But we have a lot of teachers that come into the center that are trained by us. So we have our educational services outreach director, and she's out training across the state of Tennessee. So thousands and thousands of teachers get impacted by the work that we do at the center. It just depends on which kind of area that you're looking for.
You know, for years, I think people looked at the university and thought, all right, well, we have a bunch of professors here who teach classes and that's where it stops.
Yeah.
But there is a lot more to it.
Oh, yeah. And the center is very big on advocacy work, not only for us advocating for our community, but we also try to put supports in place to teach families of students with dyslexia to advocate for themselves in their own communities. So be it at the school level, advocating for interventions, accommodations, or even just the greater community and accessibility for their kids.
No, I know you mentioned grants as one of the things you'll be looking for, I guess, in your new role. But are you looking for grants for things just in the Tennessee area that can be done that are tied to dyslexia, or what are you looking for?
So we're looking at some that are just very specific to the state of Tennessee. We also, through just connections that we have through our doctoral trainings, myself and Dr. Kehoe, looking at some impact that this might have in the state of Virginia as well. I also have connections to Texas. So it's a little bit larger. So we look at federal grants that could help us generalize to a larger scale, but then we get kind of smaller money foundation grants that look a little bit more to Middle Tennessee.
Cool. Again with us this morning, Dr. Jennifer Stewart, the new Assistant Director for Research Initiatives at MTSU's Center for the Study and Treatment of Dyslexia. And again, you just started this role here. How long ago?
Just about a month ago.
A month ago.
Yeah.
So they threw you into the fire right away.
They threw me in real fast.
Well, if anybody would like to learn more, how can they do that when it comes to this department?
So they can reach out to us at our MTSU website at the Dyslexia Center. So you can look it up, and then you can contact us there, and then three times a year you can make sure you get on our wait list if you think your child suspects dyslexia and you feel like you need additional testing that you didn't get through your school. You can reach out 3 times a year and get on our wait list.
Cool. Hey, again, Dr. Jennifer Stewart, well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Right now that time, 8:33. Stay with us. More news and information coming up.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, this is Peter Demas. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant. So many people buy so many different things. You know, I go out to eat and I like eating steak, where my wife will end up getting her salmon. Our salmon is cut fresh, so she loves her salmon. It's one of those places that you can go, you can get pastas or chicken. You know, the kids love it. Get what you want at Demas's Restaurant and not be limited just to one or two items. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
If you're planning an upcoming trip and want to include your pet, we have all the travel supplies you'll need at Animal City. This is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Animal City is Murfreesboro's hometown family-owned pet store. We've had the honor and pleasure of serving the community for 33 years. If you want to see some photos of our adorable pets, feel free to check out our Facebook page, Animal City of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could be lower testosterone.
Lower T.
Yeah, I went through it a while back. Once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. I got Nugenix Total T, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I've seen that ad on TV. Is it for real?
Oh, yeah. The key ingredient is something called Tesnor, which helps boost free and total testosterone levels to help you trim up and stay lean.
And it's made a difference for you?
Man, I feel like I'm in my 20s again. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
Are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try it for themselves?
Yeah, you just need to send them a text.
Text LION to 42424 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text LION to 42424. That's LION to 42424.
CBS News Special Report. The head of the Secret Service says the agency has reviewed and strengthened security at the Republican National Convention after Saturday's assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. This convention delegate says she's not surprised Mr. Trump arrived in Milwaukee a little more than 24 hours after a bullet grazed his ear.
I think he is who he is, and I think that you can look back at the way he's behaved in the last debate, the way he behaved when they tried to assassinate him, that he is resolve and he is strong.
Investigators are still looking for the shooter's motive. National security contributor Samantha Vinograd.
Lone actors are notoriously hard to detect and hard to prevent from engaging in violent activity.
Secret Service agents shot the 20-year-old gunman to death. CBS's Sabrina Franzen.
Investigators say an AR-style rifle found near his body was purchased legally and registered to his father.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Life changes, then it changes again. Hi, I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Lee Colvin. A job loss, change in health, or loss of a loved one can have a big impact on your family's financial security. Let's work together to help make sure that you're equipped for life's unexpected events. Stop by our office in the Public Shopping Center on South Rutherford Boulevard or give us a call at 615-907-7056 for an appointment. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Right now that time, 8:37, you're tuned to WGNS again on this Monday morning. Now with us in studio from MTSU, Dr. Richard Tarpey, Assistant Professor in the College Supply Chain Management Program, and then also the director of the new Center for Supply Chain Management and Sustainability. So tell us a little bit about that role and what exactly all of that is.
Sure. So the role is new along with the center. Our vision for the center is to broaden our engagement for our students with our industry partners. So being in Middle Tennessee, which is really a hot spot for supply chain. If you think about it, if you drive down Interstate 24 or 840 or 65, you can see all the warehouses, manufacturing facilities all over the place in Middle Tennessee. So as our student base grows, we try to encourage them to engage more with those industry partners in preparation for getting jobs when they graduate.
It's got to be an interesting area to study, because Tennessee, especially Middle Tennessee, is growing so fast. I mean, literally, I think faster than it ever has before. So that has to make it a fascinating place when it comes to business in general.
It is. And actually, it's great for supply chain, wonderful for us. And that's why our program keeps growing. If you look at the Nashville Chamber of Commerce website, you'll see a statistic that says 70% of the U.S. population lives within 12-hour drive of Middle Tennessee, based on the fact that being majority of population lives east of the Mississippi River, and we're right slap dab in the middle of that.
And of course, Murfreesboro, you have 840, you have I-24, 65 on one side and 40 on the other. With all those interstates literally almost in Rutherford County for the most part, I mean, do you foresee that this area will be even more of a growth hotspot in the next 10 years?
I do. I think it's going to turn into what we would call a logistics cluster, which is, as more and more companies locate into this area, the infrastructure is going to have to improve as well. So in addition to the interstates, we all know what the traffic problems are now through Nashville. 5-10 years down the road, we're going to see more development, more infrastructure, and more certainly distribution centers and those type of companies coming in this area.
So in the years to come, are you going to see more students who are doing a variety of studies on business, on supply chain management here at MTSU? And then are they going to be working with a lot of different companies in our area?
Yeah, I believe so. Our program, which started several years ago, we're up to 120 students right now, undergrads. We have 40 grads. The program keeps growing. So we know we're attracting students into MTSU for supply chain. And a lot of that is, let's be honest, that's after COVID and everybody couldn't find their toilet paper, suddenly everybody knows what supply chain is. Prior to this, supply chain was not a very popular program or a popular field of study. It was operations. But now supply chain is very well known. It has a lot of popularity as supply chain got everybody through COVID. So as we attract more and more students, the key there is then get those students out and get them into careers within local companies. So our programs are partnered right now with over 75 of those local companies. We have so many corporate headquarters here for Nissan, Firestone, HCA, Dollar General, Old Time Pottery. All those companies have their corporate headquarters here. They have distribution centers here. All of them are hiring our students out into careers.
Hey, I know for a lot of large companies, you've got, you know, of course, the manufacturer, then you have the warehouse that houses whatever it is they build or manufacture, then you have the logistics companies out there who transport it all over the country. But how does all of this fit together? When you look at that word supply chain, how does all this work together?
So supply chain itself is just everything from the point of procuring the raw materials all the way through to delivery to the customer. So all aspects of those processes are part of the supply chain. So we have students who go out into logistics, which is really working on the transportation side and getting products either to the manufacturers or getting those products to distribution centers, to consumers, whatever the case may be. We have students that have ended up being at Nissan in the manufacturing world as analysts, whether it be through demand planning or forecasting, purchasing or procurement. Our students really go out into all those roles. And if you think about supply chain, there's hundreds of roles within supply chain. Again, back in the 70s, we called this merely operations, which every company has some sort of supply chain aspect that needs somebody to either move goods or plan services.
Will you be studying the sustainability of certain types of companies or certain types of products within your position, or is it more of an overall look at it all?
It's more overall. So really the sustainability issue in supply chain right now deals with two facets. One is using raw materials efficiently. The second side is what happens to products when they're done. So we call that the reverse supply chain. Two another aspects. Reverse supply chain would be all those products that come back to the company with returns. How do we deal with those? A lot of companies, fast fashion companies, those go right to the landfills. So part of sustainability is, what do you do with those return products so they don't end up in the landfills? The other aspect is, when products are done, their life cycle's over, how do they get properly disposed of? So that's a big component of sustainability as we produce more and more these days.
When you look at global companies out there that manufacture a variety of goods, there are certain things they can do. Maybe it's cutting this one step, it ends up saving them several million dollars a year. Will you be researching into that depth of within companies, ways that they can save money?
We do. We actually have what we call a synergy program that has two sub-programs. One is called Synergy Experience, and one is called Synergy Collab Lab. Collab Lab is where students work with companies for a semester on a specific problem. We just had three students finish up with a local company. It's a global company, but they have local presence. And the students worked on optimizing the routes from the raw materials or the products coming in from Asia and Europe. What is the optimal routes to get across the ocean, to get into the United States, and then get to their distribution centers throughout the United States? So if you think about those routes, there's endless combinations. The students work through optimizing what is the most cost-effective routes, looking at both costs as well as carbon dioxide carbon dioxide footprints, to see not only what was the cheapest, but what was also the most environmentally sustainable options.
A lot of big companies out there, a lot of them grew very fast. May have been in the 80s, may have been in the 90s, but they saw amazing growth. If they were successful, they saw amazing growth. But during that growth period, they didn't have time to slow down to actually say, well, what are things we can do to make our product better, or things that we can do to make the cost of our product a little bit cheaper? But I could see where, for example, MTSU could come and play a role in that and say, well, we're able to slow it down and look at the bigger picture. And then you're able to say, if you did it this way, or if you shipped it this way, you'd be able to save X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's why a lot of companies come to us for these projects with students. Students have a different perspective that the companies may not have. So students have very diverse backgrounds. They're just getting into their careers, or our master students have already been doing things for quite a while. A lot of our master students have been working full-time for years, and they're looking to further their career or move into a different position. So companies get those different perspectives on some of these problems, which many times will open up different proposals or different opportunities.
I guess a lot of times people are in maybe an old way of thinking. It used to be done this way, so we'll continue to do it this way, instead of thinking outside that box.
Exactly, right. It's always been done this way, so we'll continue doing it.
So what are some things you see coming up in the future within this program at MTSU?
Well, we have our annual supply chain conference. This will be the fourth year in the spring. It'll be held in March of 2025. Last year, we've had tremendous growth. We had over 300 participants. We had over 90 industry participants representing 50 different organizations. So all these folks came to MTSU for a day, and we had multiple tracks talking about specific supply chain issues. That was where we truly get students, faculty, and industry representatives together to talk about supply chain issues. So we intend to grow that conference even more. We intend to grow more of our partnerships with our industry partners so we can get students on campuses, into the manufacturing plants and the distribution centers, to actually get some real-world experience on their resumes. And then our third aspect is, we hope to get more industries collaborating with other industries within the Middle Tennessee area. We have a lot of third-party logistics firms. We have a lot of manufacturers. We have a lot of distribution centers that could all learn from each other. We hope to provide the conduit for those companies to get together and discuss some of these issues.
Is Tennessee a state that is top-heavy in one category versus another? Maybe it's distribution centers. Maybe it's shipping and logistics. Is there a top-heavy side of business in Tennessee when it comes to larger companies?
That's a great question. I don't think so. We're pretty evenly balanced between distribution centers, logistics firms, and manufacturing. We don't have as much manufacturing as perhaps as other states do. Middle Tennessee has quite a bit of manufacturing. But I think we're pretty evenly balanced. And of course, with healthcare, we're top heavy in healthcare services, which has large supply chains, mind you. But I think we're pretty evenly balanced.
If somebody would like to learn more about any of these things that we talked about this morning, does the new Center for Supply Chain Management, do they have a website or anything?
We don't yet. It's under works. Right now we have supplychain@mtsu.edu is one way to get a hold of us. And then, of course, they can always contact myself. If you go to the MTSU website, you will see in the supply chain pages, you can find contact information and more information.
Sounds good. Again, Dr. Richard Tarpey, the assistant professor in the College Supply Chain Management Program and the director of the new Center for Supply Chain Management and Sustainability. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Right now, that time, 8:49. You're tuned to WGNS again on this Monday morning, today, the 15th of July. Stay with us. We do have more news and information coming up.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
We'll see a few spotty showers and thunderstorms at times this afternoon. A blend of clouds and sunshine develops, a high into the upper 90s. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 75. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Fujitsky on News Radio WGNS.
Currently, it's 75.
At Heritage South Community Credit Union, we help when others won't. It's what our members tell us we do every day. The older model car you need to get to work? Yeah, we've helped with that. When you have a financial emergency and don't know where to turn, we've helped with that. Repairing your credit? Yes, we've helped with that. How about a second chance at a checking account? We've even helped with that. Experience the Heritage South difference. Learn more at heritagesouth.org. Insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Good morning. It's starting to get a little bit heavier in the last few minutes on 24 westbound, coming out of Murfreesboro, Rutherford County, up through the Antioch area. It also picked up even more in the last 15, 20 minutes, 65 south at Trinity Lane. Still looks good on I-40 coming in through the Mount Juliet area, coming in from Wilson County all the way up to Donaldson Pike. Prince's Hot Chicken has new items on the menu. Check them all out today at princeshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
By growing up in the restaurant business and being always around it, it was just something that was just second nature to me. I didn't realize the amount of work that was involved in it. I didn't understand and appreciate all that my parents sacrificed in order to provide for us. And now I'm very thankful and I'm very appreciative of the foundation that they laid for me so we could teach others to create what they have done to make it more of a legacy than just a passing of the torch.
This is Peter Demas inviting you to enjoy a meal with our family at Demas's Restaurant.
French's, the name to trust. French's, depend on us. French's, a great selection too. We take pride in pleasing you. Get brand names at a lower price. The French family really treats you nice. It makes good sense to shop at French's. French's Shoes and Boots.
That's French's Shoes and Boots, 1837 South Church Street in Murfreesboro.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Right now that time, 8:52, our guest now is Carly Eskew, Director of the Executive Education Program in the MTSU Jones College of Business. So, good morning, first of all.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
So talk about this new role a little bit and what you'll be doing.
I'd love to. So this is a new role. Dean Heems established this position in the Jones College of Business. She's been here just over a year, and executive education was a really big priority for her coming in. So my job is over time to establish the Jones College of Business as a premier training and development outlet for both individuals and organizations in the Middle Tennessee area.
So is this for, let's say, executives within different companies throughout Middle Tennessee?
Yes, but not exclusively. So executive education is kind of a misnomer. So sometimes folks will look at that title and think, okay, I'm not yet an executive in my company. This must not be for me. Actually, this is for anyone aspiring to take that next step. And so we'll have a mix of courses, open enrollment courses this fall, offering both soft skill and technical skill development. And so I really see this as a place where folks are going to be coming together from Rutherford County and beyond if they're looking to grow their career either within their firm or possibly to skill up to find a new opportunity.
And then how long will these courses be, and are they done online? Where do folks go to actually do the course?
So it'll be a mix. Most of our courses will be within the 1 to 2 day time frame. We will have courses that will expand about a week this fall. A few of our industry specific courses will meet over several months, a couple of times a week. So it just sort of depends on the content and the engagement of some of our industry partners. We will have a mix of online and face-to-face offerings. This fall, we will be entirely synchronous, meaning you're not opting into a set of videos to watch. You're actually being instructed by a live faculty member. And most of our courses will be offered face-to-face. We're really lucky the Jones College of Business to have a wonderful training center over at the Miller Education Center. So we have both participatory classrooms as well as breakout rooms so that faculty can really facilitate activities for students to learn in a hands-on way immediately after finding out more about the content.
So those who are currently, let's say they are executives at, you know, XYZ company out there, the information they learn during these courses, will they be taking it back and teaching it to others, or will they mainly, you know, take on whatever it is and simply better themselves in the company?
So again, I think it'll probably be a mix based on the individual and even the topic. What we've seen over the last few years is that, alum of MBA program and other master's and even undergraduate programs will remember a faculty member that taught them a really important concept. And they find themselves utilizing that information regularly. And so they want their team to get up to speed. So they'll share more about what they'd learned, you know, when they were in the Jones College, but then we've also had companies come back and say, hey, teach this content to my whole team. And so I think beginning in spring and even more so next fall, you'll find us doing more company specific programming based on that demand from managers to get some help teaching that content and spreading it throughout their own organizations.
Are there any topics that business leaders in our area have said, you know, hey, this is where we really do need maybe some extra guidance?
So I think AI is a big one right now. So there can be two extremes, or at least the perception of two extremes. One extreme is stay really far away because it's dangerous and inaccurate. And then the other extreme is let it do everything. And I don't think either are right. So we have faculty within the business school prepared to teach managers and even individual contributors what makes sense. How does it make sense to safely utilize AI in the business realm? Because, you know, if your teams these days aren't figuring out, you know, how to make their processes more efficient with AI, some of their competitors are. And so one of the courses we'll be offering this fall is how to do exactly that, how to safely leverage some of the latest AI tools within your business in a way that's going to keep you up to speed with the competition.
You know, it's interesting because as you said that, I could actually picture some companies out there literally letting AI products do, you know, half of their job or, mm-hmm. or if not more. Whereas I could see another half of companies out there saying no to AI altogether. So is there an in-between at this point yet, or is it a lot of people do one or the other, one extreme or the other?
So not being the faculty member of record to teach the course, I'll share kind of what my view is and I'll let the experts handle it in our course from there. Maybe we can get you signed up for the course. I do think there is a middle ground, you know, and I've discussed this with some folks here in Rutherford County already. If we can articulate a way to, you know, sort of dip your toe into streamlining communications, for example, using some of the more basic free AI tool in a way that doesn't share any of your company's proprietary information, information. I think there is, you know, an early middle ground, a middle ground, and then probably an engagement that maybe more an advanced user would manage. But that's exactly what our course this fall is going to articulate. And not only that, the course will talk about how we got here. So how did AI work its way into the workplace so quickly? And how is AI going to affect local businesses going forward? So it's going to be sort of a look back, an assessment of the current state, a look ahead, but then also a way to, you know, immediately apply some of the AI tools that folks may not be aware of.
And again, with us this morning, Carly Eskew, the director of the Executive Education Program in the MTSU Jones College of Business. And, you know, as we close this morning, I should ask you this first, but what made you want to come to MTSU to be a part of this program?
So Tennessee is actually home for me. I haven't lived in Middle Tennessee for almost 15 years, so it was really exciting for me to get to come back to my home state. I'm originally from Sumner County. But when I look back on my career, I'm really proud to say that everything that I've done has been about building others' careers. So I've done that in a variety of settings. I went to Belmont as an undergrad, and part of an engagement course that I took had me teaching GED courses in a women's correctional facility here. And I actually love that environment because I got to be around women who were trying to better their career prospects and make a, you know, a more successful path for themselves going forward.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Right now that time is 9 o'clock. We're already out of time this morning. We have local news coming your way next right here on WGNS.